Welcome to the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast, the show where we explore the unity of spirituality and mental health. I'm your host, Dr. Samuel Lee, and it's a joy to be on this transformative, epic journey with you. I call the most epic love story ever written, the return of at least a billion souls back to source. As a board-certified psychiatrist with a deep passion for integrating spirituality and mental well-being, I'm here to guide you through the eternal life wisdom, latest science, expert interviews, and personal stories that will catalyze your path to healing, growth, self-realization, and self-actualization. Enough said, let's dive into today's episode. What's up, beautiful souls? Welcome to another episode of the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast. I'm your host, and I'm here with my dear brother, Jacob Ford. He's a beautiful father, family man, a brother, a co-worker, and also on the path of consciousness and the path of liberation. He is a brother I would go to war with, and we are going to war with. And what I mean by that is, you know, just holding space together for souls together. It's been an absolute joy and a privilege to serve together. So I wanted to have Jake on this podcast and give him a voice to be able to share what's coming from his heart with our audience and the hero's path he's been on. And hopefully it will resonate with some people. But before we begin, I always like to set the frequency. So I'm just going to go ahead and speak a few words and set the frequency around this podcast, around each and every person who might be listening. By the love of original, eternal source consciousness field, I surround this podcast. I surround this brotherhood. I surround this mission. I surround this company with the frequency of unconditional love, pure frequency of unconditional love. We invite the eternal beloved ones to come through and channel in the highest joy, good, abundance for each and every person who is listening. And we set a barrier around this frequency, around this podcast, on all dimensions and all timelines of the frequency of unconditional love. By the truth of original eternal source consciousness field, we stand, we welcome in the frequency of our truth. For the truth will set us free, and we are free indeed. And for such a time as this, the world and earth is looking for men and women who will speak their truth unapologetically, stand in their power. So we welcome in the frequency of truth. We welcome in the frequency of power, unique, oscillatory, vibratory reflection of Almighty Living Christ. Universe is what we are, made in the image and likeness of Source. So we welcome each one of us right now to step into our power. Unapologetically unconditioned ourselves by the grace of original eternal source consciousness field. I now sanctify and renew this podcast, this brotherhood, as under the divine protector of this conversation, as under the divine protector of the original eternal life, founders, races, Melchizedek, cloister, emerald, amethyst, and gold order, which I am a level 6 Ekar, Mashiahana, master councils of Aquarian for the highest good, joy, and abundance and freedom for each and every person. As we communicate today, we give gratitude in advance. Thy kingdom, queendom is coming now. Thy will is now being done in this conversation as it is in the highest heavens. Taisha into Doe, Taisha into Doe, Taisha into Doe, spoken as it is stated now, and so it is done. Rasha Ira, Lotus for Christ. Surround us now. So cool. Thank you for allowing me to do that. What's up, brother Jacob? Good, brother. Good, man. Really good. Yeah, it's been a fucking joy to watch your journey develop and unfold, and the magic and the growth and the beauty that is unfolding in your life. And so Jake, man, take us back, man. Tell us a little bit about your hero's journey. As you know, what are some of the key moments that helped you arrive to the man you are today, and what do you want to share with our audience?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. So first, thanks for having me on, giving me the opportunity to share my story. You know, going back, childhood, where it all started. I was a very fun, loving, go-getting kid. My parents split up at a very young age, so all I knew was back and forth. That's all I knew. I knew my mom, my dad, and I had my constant, which was my sister. She was always with me. My mom and my father got remarried. Father was very deeply in the church. Mother was living a completely different life outside of the church. So there was a lot of confusion going back and forth, just in that sense alone, is you had a lot of religion in one side and you had none on the other. So for a kid, that was confusing for me because I felt like I had all of this leeway to just be who I was on my mother's side. And then on my father's side, there were strict boundaries that made me feel as a young kid that I wasn't able to express and just be myself. Later in my years, you know, my father got very involved in the church again. My sister left and went to live with my mother, so my constant left me. And that was, I would say, my very first time of ever feeling abandoned. So by doing so, I think I had my fight or flight kind of come in, and I decided not to go back to my mom's and to stay with my father. This is around 11 or 12 years old. I decided to stay with my dad, and I think it was out of spite in the moment. I think I was really hurt and I felt abandoned by my only constant in life leaving me. So I stayed with my father, which, you know, looking back was the best decision. It's all working for me and not to me. But at the time, I didn't realize that. My father, you know, was grounded in his ways and believed that, you know, I was able to be bent and not broken. And it was tied in his religion. And that scarred me because I felt like I wasn't seen or I wasn't heard. There was a lot of times where, you know, trying to communicate how I felt would not, you know, land on my father's ears. He wouldn't hear me. And we ended up going through some hard times when I was with my dad, just me and my father. My father alone, you know, went through some hard times in his marriage when I was there. And, you know, being as young as I wasn't able to resonate and understand the things that was going on around me. I think the biggest thing is I just wanted to be a kid, and I felt like I wasn't allowed to do that. So when all of this happened, I ended up deciding to go and live with my mother, where I felt like I would have the freedom to just run and play and be able to express how I wanted to express. But my mother was struggling herself during that time that I didn't know about because we hadn't been in touch for almost 2 years. So when I went back to my mother's, it was very, very challenging times for her, but for everyone else. That was underneath of her roof. My sister, I could tell, had changed. There were struggles that she was having. Trying to raise my three little brothers who were very, very young at the time. So there was a lot that my sister was going through. There was a lot that my mother was going through. And I walked into that thinking that I had it extremely bad. And then I came to another situation where I was like, this is challenging. And I could see the hurt in both of them. I can remember being with my sister, driving with my sister when I finally came back. And this was a couple months after I had returned to my mother's. I was driving and I remember looking out and seeing, saying to myself, I feel like I'm losing touch with myself. I don't know this person that I'm becoming. And that was like a brief knowing of like, this isn't who I'm supposed to be. And I think that's when a lot of my struggles started to take place, is from that day forward, knowing that I had lost touch with myself. I started doing anything and everything to run from that feeling. I had no coping skills that allowed me to sit with those feelings and understand why I was feeling the way I was. So at a very young age, I would say 15 years old, I started to get into drugs and alcohol. And that became my escape. that became my home, where I felt like I could express the most. And the challenges just kept occurring, for my mother and for my sister and for me. So the house was very broken in that sense. So what made sense to me and what made me feel comfortable was finding that release inside of drugs and alcohol. My senior year of high school, I felt like for me, I was really turning it around. But there was still this haunting feeling that I had to get out of the situation that I was in. So by my dire need, I started finding any way I could just like get out and be independent on my own right away as soon as I turned 18. And I found that inside of the army. Still struggling with drugs and alcohol, I have created this new path for myself by signing up for the army. And I thought that was my answer. I thought this is where I'm going to find myself. This is where I'm going to gain this independence. I'm going to break these chains. And that brought along a lot of hardship. I was in a combat MOS, and the army, really trains men to be just your stereotypical man. You're strong. You don't show emotion. You look out for your brothers, and that's your goal. And you worry about the task at hand. And I saw that amongst all of the guys that I served with. Looking back now, it's just these people were just beautiful, beautiful souls, and they were all searching for something. And inside of that something, I feel like it's a lot of that masculine energy where it's they feel seen. They feel seen by the world, like, wow, these guys are it. These guys got what it takes. Inside of that comes pride. Inside of that comes a lot of ego, which I can see now is healthy, but it's when you honor that pride and ego instead of letting it run you, is when it takes place and it makes you who you are. In my time in service, there was a lot more things that took place that broke me, and I felt like I was inadequate and I wasn't enough. But every time I looked in the mirror, I saw this person that was growing physically, but I felt hollow spiritually and mentally. There was something missing. During those times in the military, I would escape the exact same way. I would drink my pain away. It made sense at the time because this is what the guys around me are doing. This is how we cope. This is how we bond and grow closer together is kind of self-sabotaging together, really, and not having that knowing that we were spiraling in a way that you could pay some serious consequences from. My time in the military taught me a lot. I honor my time in the military because it really made me grow independently. It really showed me what it was like to be on my own two feet and kind of take on life with my own eyes and my own direction. I saw at the end of my military career, getting out in the process of getting out, the military really trains you to go to war, and they train you to be this untouchable masculine man, but they don't teach you how to come home. They don't teach you how to love. They don't teach you how to love yourself. They really teach you to be a hard-driven individual who can take the reins and direct men into battle. That's their ultimate goal. So when I was coming out, I had this sense of purpose that just left me. And the scarcity that came around me not having this purpose and me not knowing what life held for me put me in a really, really dark place. I think the biggest thing inside of that, leaving the military and not having a purpose anymore, is I felt like I was losing my identity, this masculine energy that I had created for myself that I felt like was a reputation that I had to uphold, that I couldn't lose, and I had to find a firm grasp and hang on to that. So after I got out of the military, there was a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of running. My fight or flight kicked off really, really hard when I came home. I came home and I ended up getting in my car and just traveling the country. Ended up back home from my hometown in Maryland to Los Angeles, California for a little while with one of my good buddies that I served with. And then as soon as I felt uncomfortable and I didn't feel safe, I ran again. I ran to Washington State with another good buddy that I served with and started working. And then after that, I felt unsafe. So I ran again and I came back home to Maryland. And when I got back home to Maryland, it's when I had to finally sit with myself. It was every place that I went and everything that I do. Once I finally had to sit with my own emotions, and once I finally had to look myself in the mirror and understand what was going on, I couldn't. I was so uncomfortable because it wasn't that. That was a sign of compassion. That was a sign of love for myself, and I didn't understand what that was. So I felt like I was losing this masculine side of myself, and I was losing this identity that I had. You know, I felt I had worked so hard to create. So inside of that, I turned back to drugs and alcohol because that was the one thing growing up that I found, put this at ease. I was able to breathe. I was able to have a release for this minor second, which was enough for me, just not to feel that way anymore. So I didn't have to face the truth, and I could almost just lie to myself even more that no, you are still this person, and this love and this stuff that you're hiding from, that doesn't serve you. I met my wife during that time when I came back home to Maryland, and yeah, it was inside of all of these things that I felt like I was figuring it out. When I met my wife, Miranda, she changed my entire life and made me see some of the love inside of me that I never knew I had. So in my eyes, I was like, I have to hang on to this, and I have to create a life with her because she's finally making me feel something that these drugs and alcohol were making me feel. It was this release. It was this sense of purpose. It was this love that I was so unfamiliar with. And we moved very, very fast. It was very, very strong. It was a very strong connection from the very beginning. And I proposed to her very early, and we had plans of marriage following that year. And at the end of that year, finding out that I was going to be a father with my firstborn girl. And it was at that moment where I once again had to look at myself. And I had to look at the man that I was and the man that I was becoming. And I realized again that I wasn't in a place to accept that love. And I didn't feel like I was adequate enough to be a father. And then I started feeling these feelings of not being adequate to be the man that my wife needed. So I ran back to my coping skills. I started drinking and using drugs again. And this was my release for that. I couldn't sit with myself, so I ran again. That was definitely my go-to. I would get very flighty, and I would have to get out of that situation at a moment's notice. And, you know, years to come, I would be very up and down with my drugs and alcohol and my substance abuse. And you know, my daughter was born in May, and that was a glimmer of hope. When that baby entered this world, it was a love that I can't even express. It made me feel whole for a brief second, but I hung on to that hope. I said, there is hope. Because I feel how strong this love is. Through the next couple of months, I would struggle again, and then look at and almost doom myself inside of that, because I would look at it and be like, look what you're doing to your family. Look what you're doing. And I would blame, and my self-talk was so negative. I used to talk down to myself. And knowing what I know now, I was creating this for myself because of the words that I chose to speak to myself. So following the next couple of years, I would be in and out of rehabs, doing everything that I could to really find my way. During that time, we ended up pregnant with my second daughter, who was born in April of 2021. I had just got out of a rehab early that year and was very dedicated to be able to show up as the man I wanted for my family and as the man I thought my wife deserved and my children deserved. And I felt as if I was doing very well at first. And when people would ask me, "Jacob, you know, what's the root issue?" When I would go to these facilities and they would ask, "You know, what is the underlying issue that keeps you coming back to these drugs and alcohol?" I would use my time in the military as a crutch. I would use how I felt like my father didn't show up and love for me enough. I would use how my mother, you know, went through her problems and didn't show up for me enough. But what I started realizing is I never went internal. I never looked inside. I never looked, how was I not showing up for myself enough? I always looked outside, and I always was the victim in my own story. And during those years, it was a tough reality, because looking back, that's what I was doing to myself. I was victimizing myself and allowing myself to fall even deeper and deeper and deeper into this depressive state, and just ridden with anxiety. After my second daughter was born, you know, a couple months went by, and I fell back into these coping ways where I was drinking and I was using drugs again. And I was at a place of desperation. I was at a very, very deep place of desperation. I reached out to my father at the beginning of 2022, and I called him up and I said, "Hey, Dad, I know I don't ask for much, but I really need your help." Hearing my father's voice on the other end of that call, I was scared that I wasn't going to get the answer that I felt like I needed at the time. But my father, with open arms, said, "Bub, I think I have exactly what you need. If you're willing to do this, I'm willing to put it together for you." And my dad had been through, you know, at this time, 5 or plus years of his own healing journey, where he left the church, where he started his own hero's journey, and really, really had been putting in the work. So when he told me these things, I was like, I put all of my faith and all of my trust into it. I saw the change that my father had made. I could hear it in his voice. I could feel it in his words. I put all my faith into that. My father told me, "Buddy, I need you to go away, and I need you to go to a detox facility for 10 days to make sure you're safe." And so that's what I did. I hung the phone up, and it was almost blindly. I know I was in this place of desperation, but the way I would describe this, it was I almost blindly just started putting things into motion, where my tendencies before were to self-pity myself and be like, "No, I don't have to go right now. I'll get better," and then put no plan into action. So it felt like I was blindly putting these things into action. I took myself to a facility, and I was there for 10 days, still completely unsure what was happening after. I finished my 10 days, and I get into my vehicle, and I start driving back to my home. And I call my dad. My dad, you know, told me, "Hey, jump on a call with me when you get out, and I'm gonna kind of lay out some steps of what we're going to do after." So on my drive home, I'm talking to my father, and he's telling me the words that Dr. Sam had told him over a phone call. And Dr. Sam had told him that I chose him as my father, and I chose my mother as my mother, and I chose this life. And there's a reason that I'm going through these hardships that I am. And at first, you know, that didn't land, and it didn't resonate at first, but I was sobbing in my truck, because for the first time in a long time, I felt these emotions that I hadn't felt before. So he's telling me what I'm going to get into, and the 10 days coming. He had called our dear friend Nicole, and Dr. Sam, he had put together. It still kind of brings emotion back because I'm very thankful. But he had put together a 10-day IV therapy for me to really balance my brain. It was an NAD and amino acid therapy that Nicole specializes in. And he rented out an Airbnb in West Virginia, not far from my home. And that's where I met Nicole for the very first time. I joke and say I'm sure she was shaken to her core seeing me come in there because I wasn't looking my best. Long beard, shaggy hair, 150 pounds, and just very desperate and lost. I kept trying to tell myself I don't understand why I'm doing this. Why am I doing this? This isn't going to work. I've tried everything. I've been to 7 rehabs in the last year and a half. What's this going to change? And when I walk in, the energy that was in that room with just Nicole and my father being in there gave me this sense of peace where I was able to sit back and go, I'm going to be okay. Nicole is an angel, and to be able to sit there and spend the first 6 days with me, you know, hooking me up to these IVs and just talking and just this connection that we were able to make over these 6 days was absolutely phenomenal. You know, when I came to her, I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. And 2 days on these IV therapies, I was eating like I was a 200-pound man again, just eating away and then getting the best sleep I had ever gotten in my life. I looked at Nicole and I said, just from the IVs alone, I feel like someone had walked inside of my brain and turned these light switches on that had been off for years. I had never felt more clear in my entire life. So this is when really emotions start kicking up and I start learning about the things that I'm about to embark on day 7, which was the heart protocol. So these nerves start kicking up now and I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to get nervous. And poor Nicole, I asked that woman every question under the sun. You know, who is Dr. Sam? How is he? What's the protocol like? What's the experience like? And now looking back, it's one of the lines in Dr. Sam's book that says this protocol is better experienced than explained. Beforehand, I was like, of course, I don't get any answers. But after experiencing myself, it makes so much sense. It's very hard to explain because each soul is different and unique. So the nerves were there. The emotions were there. And on day 7, I got to meet Dr. Samuel Lee. And the presence that he brought into that room made me feel anxious and peaceful all at the same time. That's when at first I could understand the term spiritual warrior, because I felt this peace, but I also felt this strong presence. And for me, all of this was very out there. I didn't understand it at all. But I trusted my father and I trusted his lead. So when he got there, I got to talk to Dr. Sam and after just a brief conversation with him, I understood I was in the right place and I was exactly where I needed to be. Going into my first ceremony, sure there was nerves and Dr. Sam, you know, relayed to me that these nerves are beautiful and they're normal. They're very, very normal. Be curious. No expectations. Allow yourself to let go and see what's to hold. And my first journey, the first hour and a half, the thing that had a hold of me the strongest was my ego. I didn't say a word and I wouldn't let go. I like to explain it as I was falling through this Brillo pad and out of nowhere I let go. And it felt like I landed into these beautiful clouds. And my first words were, wow, how do I tell everybody about this? How can I relay this message to everyone? Because all of this pain and all of this suffering that I had been hanging on to for so long was gone. And that was after an hour and a half. When I finished my journey, the first person that I wanted to talk to was Nicole. Which is funny because my father was there, who I looked up to, and have my entire life. But the first person I wanted to see was Nicole, because we had just spent 7 days connecting and sharing stories that I hadn't shared with many people other than maybe my wife. And I got to sit in a sense of peace. Oh my goodness. I got to sit in a sense of peace. That I don't know if I've ever felt before in my lifetime. I finally understood what it was to love myself with zero expectations. I just loved myself. And I understood at this point that the only thing that was keeping me sick and so lost for so long was my ego. It was playing the biggest role in my life, and it wasn't allowing me to feel that love that I already had inside of me. It's a term you'll hear, and I've heard so many times, but you are the medicine. And after that journey, it never resonated with me more how much I was who I was looking for. And I was running from this guy for a very, very long time. After that journey, my father came back the next day and he looked at me and he said, "Son, I want you to live this." Because all I kept asking was, "How do I share this? How do I share this with my wife? How do I share this with my kids?" And he looked at me and he said, "I want you to live it." And at the time, it didn't make sense. How do you live this? How do you tell people about this? Is all I kept thinking. Man, how do I tell the world? I want to run to the highest mountaintop and scream. Oh, I got it, guys. You don't have to keep feeling this. There's answers. So I really hung on to that living it. So when I got home and I started to integrate this into my life, daily practices became the biggest thing for me. Where can I sit in this? And where can I find this peace every single day? There was this fierce knowing that if I stayed on this path, I am going to be okay. It didn't matter where I go. There was a mantra I started to live by, and it was love, forgiveness, and happiness, something that I've heard for many, many years from my father, and it didn't resonate. These three things resonated was love, forgiveness, and happiness. How can I approach every situation, every person, every scenario with these three things? And with zero expectation, just for myself, how can I approach these situations that way? And if I do so, I'm okay. And that was my biggest takeaway from my very first one, was no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you're okay. And that was the biggest breakthrough for me, because it was finally this place where I didn't have to run nowhere but right here. I didn't have to run from anything. If things started coming up, I was able to sit with myself and start being curious and say, "Why? Why am I feeling this way? Okay, I see that. And now I realize I can love that. I can forgive myself for looking at things some in some ways. I can love myself for looking at things in some ways. And then I can be happy in the knowing that I'm okay." The months to come would be me doing everything I could, to move on with the purpose that I had found for myself, and my purpose that I had found for myself was helping others in any possible way. It didn't matter what it was. I wanted to help other people. A couple months had gone by, and you know, Nicole had reached out to me and asked if I wanted to come on and help this movement. And I was super excited, but kind of caught off guard at the same time. But it was authentic, and I dove headfirst into that. inside of that came a lot of uncertainties. And inside of that came me looking at side of myself that I weren't comfortable with still. But it made me explore further inside of myself. It made me sit with myself in these uncomfortable situations where before I would drop it all and run. And finally, I had this knowing now of love and forgiveness that I was like, no, I can sit with these emotions and I can show up the exact way that I want to show up. So with that knowing, I really started diving in and doing as much as I could to help at the highest level that I could, because I believe in what is happening. I believe in the magic and the love that is being spread and the healing that is happening around the HAARP protocol. I was called to do my second journey a year ago now, and in that journey was kind of like a stamp of approval of what I had done in my integration leading up until that point. I was spreading a lot of love. I was feeling a lot of love. I was screaming, hooping and hollering, enjoying where I was and how far I had come. But the one thing that did pop up for me again was a sense of insecurity, a sense of inadequacy. I was, hey, you're not good enough. And in that moment, I yelled at the top of my lungs that I am powerful. I am powerful. And after that journey was finished and I went back and listened to my transcript, I'm listening to it and almost finding this piece of me that's saying, are you good enough? And the moment I asked that question to myself, in my transcript, I yelled, I am powerful. And with the knowing that I had from my first transcript, because I went into my integration so fiercely, that this is exactly what I've been looking for. As soon as I heard myself say I'm powerful, I knew that was my higher self. I knew that was spirit, that was source, whatever you want to call it. I knew that that was my higher self telling me, do not question this. You are powerful. Stand in it. And that's all I needed to hear. That's it. I didn't need to hear it from anybody else. I needed to hear it from myself. I needed to hear myself tell myself I'm powerful because I love myself. I trust myself. And it was a testament of how comfortable I was to sit with myself to when I heard those words that it spoke volumes and had me really stand secure in where I was. So going on to living in my knowing and not having to try to run and tell people about this, not long after my first journey and just by living it, my sister saw a difference. My sister journeyed. By my sister journeying, my brother-in-law journeyed. By my brother-in-law journeying, my wife journeyed. Through that, me and my wife had a connection we had never had before. And through my years of drug abuse, I put my wife through a lot. I put my wife through a lot. And in her first journey, she was able to heal little Miranda. But I remember something that she told me afterwards is that, Jacob, I just feel like I can't let go of all the things that had happened. And you know, the Jacob before this would have taken defense that, like, look at all that I've done. Look at where I've come from and look at where I am now. But I was in a place where I heard her and I could understand that. She was hurt. There was a part of her that was hurt and she wasn't able to deal with at the time. My wife's second journey, I was there and I was able to hold space for her. And she was nervous because she didn't know what she would say. But I did a lot of praying. And I told my wife that I want you to speak so freely because I'm in a place where I can hear anything you need to say. And I love me and I love you. So any words that you need to say will fall on receiving ears. And she was able to be the most transparent she's ever been in her entire life in that second journey of hers. And I was able to hear things and understand things that I wasn't understanding before. When we went home after her second journey, things have never been better. We can communicate and understand each other in a way that we were never able to before. Sure, we're human. Sure, we still deal with these emotions and things come up. But the way they are resolved are in a manner I could only have dreamed of because of how well we see each other. You know, my mission is simple, but it's so vast. It's simple but large. I pour into myself, I pour into my family, and I pour into others because that's what I was called to do. I live by the I we all, something my dear father had shared with me many, many years ago, but resonates so deeply now. I show up for myself and priority first, so I could show up and be the best husband, best father, and so I could be the best friend to the people that I'm now serving. Yeah, brother. Thanks for letting me share that.
Yeah. Honor, man. Thank you for your hero's journey. Thank you for being born.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, man. Thank you for sharing from your heart. So many beautiful themes, things you've overcome and are overcoming from your hero's journey. What would you say now to a little kid whose parents are just, he's 12, he's in church, and he's confused, and his parents are separating. What type of wisdom do you have for that kid?
The warmest embrace. The warmest embrace. I would allow that kid to know you are loved, you are seen, you are heard, you're not forgotten. That young inner child of mine does come out at times. And that inner child is insecure and he's scared and he just wants to be loved. And that's what I would tell that young boy is that you are loved, you are seen, you are heard. And I would give him the biggest hug, because that's all he needed. He just needed to be seen. He just needed to be heard.
What do you say to a kid who's in church, who's confused by the patriarchy, by the black and white, the division, the hypocrisy that he might be seeing in church? Is there anything you want to say to anybody going through that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Inside of that, you know, dealing with that myself, I would tell that kid that all of the purity that he sees with inside of that, follow that fiercely. But following that fiercely will bring up a new knowing. And once you have that knowing, blinders can be lifted. And that's what happened for me. I started seeing some hypocrisy with inside of the church. I started seeing all of these things, which made me question, is what I'm following authentic? I would tell that young boy to be curious. I would tell that young boy to follow fiercely in what he believes and be curious. That's what I would tell him. Yeah.
Beautiful, brother. Yeah. And like any words of advice to your warrior brothers out there who have been, found a purpose in camaraderie and in trained to be tough and masculine, and they have been overseas and felt that camaraderie and purpose, and they're starting to wake up, and they're being thrown back into society, and that purpose and that brotherhood
Absolutely.
is being stripped from them. Any words for your brothers in comrade there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a quote that I heard from Joe Rogan. I can't remember where he got it from, but this is where I heard it. And it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. And that resonated with me. Because it's okay to have that masculine side. It's okay to want to be, a masculine presence. But that masculine presence is used when the time is needed. The other times, it is meant for love and compassion and healing and understanding who you are. What I would tell my brothers that are out there, my brothers and sisters that are out there, that are having a tough time with this transition, I would tell them that they are seen, they are heard, and they are loved. And all of the things that they are going through right now, as much as it seems like there's no way out and you've dug this hole so low that no one can get to you, all you have to do is look right here. And it's closer than what you think, and I promise there's hope. And where there's hope, there's so much to explore. You are loved, you are seen, you are heard. And we're a phone call away, always. That's what I would tell them for sure.
Beautiful. And I know you mean that. And what about so many out there right now who was like you in the past, sitting there, they couldn't sit with their feelings. There was these they thought they felt like they were losing their soul. And nobody really could, they didn't have the self-awareness to explain it. And they're turning to numb. They're going to drugs, they're going to alcohol, they're on the street living that life, and they're finding temporary relief in that moment. Anything you want to say to people who are going through something like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would say to those people is you're not to blame. And what I mean by that is where when people are stuck in this place, they throw so much dirt on themselves. They put themselves even further down than they started, and it's all self-inflicted. The thing that I would tell those people is there, if there's breath in your lungs, there's still a fighting chance. There is still a fighting chance, and you have people out there that love you, whether you believe that or not. My road is to help as many people as I possibly can, and you're not forgotten. Love is here. Love is within you. And you just can't see that right now, but I promise when that veil's lifted, you'll be blown away with how much love you have in there still. You're not forgotten. Please don't lose hope. As long as there's air in your lungs, you can fight. And I believe in you.
Long as there's breath in my
For sure.
lungs, I ain't done. Jake,
Definitely.
beautiful man. So what's getting you jazzed these days, man? What's getting you jazzed? What's getting you going? 'Cause it's amazing, man. Every time I see you, man, the same passion I felt in your voice 2 years ago, you still got that same passions flowing through. I'm a psychiatrist. I just listen and I hear that when someone starts talking about their passion, their voice shifts and something like I can feel it, the tone, the rhythm. So what's getting you jazzed, man? What's getting you going?
Yeah, A line from one of my favorite guys. We haven't even had breakfast yet. It's where we've started. It's very, very fresh. So what's getting me jazzed nowadays is really enjoying the process. Enjoying the process because it has felt like at times where it's like this hard work, and I'm grinding to stay aligned with where I want to go. What's getting me jazzed is now enjoying the process and really pouring into me, out of joy and my family, really being present in that moment. That's really getting me amped up, and then working with people, and helping them with perspective on carrying this stuff back into their daily life. That has me over the moon excited, because it's so cool when being a part of someone unlocking their true potential and understanding that. There's something about that that's like it's just hard to explain, honestly. But I'm really excited to continue to grow in my own hero's journey, as well as be a part of others. It's there's nothing like it, man. So that's what's got me real jazzed up for this year and the years to come.
Yeah, beautiful brother, man. Well, I really mean it, man, when I say, from the bottom of my heart, man, like, thank you for being born, I guess what Scott told you, dear brother Scott. Oh, man, it takes a lot of courage, to be born on Earth, to forget who you are, to choose a really interesting hero's journey, to be born to a beautiful, amazing ancient father and a mother. To be born into a church where it was all black and white, to be able to go through that where you had to battle through not being seen, where you had to battle through then being in an environment where not only you but the people around you were going through things, right? And then having to like sit with yourself, feel like you're losing your soul, and then go into the darkness. And go to the motherfucking keys and take the fucking keys in hell and figure out, not give up, get up every single time, choose love one more time, choose love, yeah, fall back and then come back many, 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 many times. Every single time, didn't give up, chose love, somehow found the universe sent you sparks into your life, such as your wife, sparks and reminders into your life that gave you a little glimpse of hope, that gave you enough temporary relief where you didn't give up, fall seven times, get back up eight, and you didn't give up, and you continue to somehow muster some hope, had to give gifted two beautiful, amazing daughters by the universe, and you continued on your hero's journey, even though the eighth time this crazy ass doctor walks into your room on day seven and a redhead, you somehow chose every step of the way to receive the treatment. And somehow an hour into your protocol, you decided that you were going to fall into the clouds, and all of a sudden, boom. And then you decided that you were going to do integration, where you're going to develop a daily practice, where you're going to choose love, joy, and forgiveness, love, healing, and forgiveness every single time, where you're going to choose to learn how to sit in your comfort. You can choose to watch that sunrise every single morning and tune into that same clouds that held you in that ceremony. And you're going to choose that when things don't feel aligned, to sit with it and somehow believe that, hey, this is my purpose, this is what I'm here to do, and then have those conversations and then get the call. And then once you got the call, you still had to grind through it, and then you still kept the passion, and here we are a year and a half, 2 years later, but we're serving together now. You're doing integration calls now, and you're living out your motherfucking hero's journey, man, and it's a fucking joy to ride next to you. And you're right, bro.
Likewise,
We
brother.
ain't even had breakfast yet.
That's
Yeah.
right.
So much love.
That's right.
Thanks for hopping on with me. Love, light, peace, and truth to all sentient beings. Yeehaw! Let's go.
Welcome to the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast, the show where we explore the unity of spirituality and mental health. I'm your host, Dr. Samuel Lee, and it's a joy to be on this transformative, epic journey with you. I call the most epic love story ever written. the return of at least a billion souls back to source. As a board-certified psychiatrist with a deep passion for integrating spirituality and mental well-being, I'm here to guide you through the eternal life wisdom, latest science, expert interviews, and personal stories that will catalyze your path to healing, growth, self-realization, and self-actualization. Enough said, let's dive into today's episode.